we have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat This Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
And sure enough, there we go.
You Maria's... forgot how to turn on my microphone.
It's been a while. No one being there. All right.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Welcome back. And we've got a ton to cover this morning. So let's start out with the Seattle Police Department and drones.
Yeah, the FAA has approved an application by the Seattle Police Department to deploy surveillance drones over the city of Seattle. And you might ask, why do they need surveillance drones in the city of Seattle? Well, the usual excuse by police departments, and the SPD is not the first one to request this and get approval, the usual excuse is that they use them to find missing persons, particularly when people are out hiking in the wild or camping and they go missing.
And there's so many wilderness areas within city limits.
Yeah, you'd say, okay, well, the state patrol or the search and or the local search and rescue could certainly use some surveillance drones, but the Seattle Police Department, well, you know, you'd be right if you think, as I do, that it's yet another intrusion on your privacy. And you would think that the police union would be concerned because, of course, surveillance drones could be used to replace actual SPD officers in doing the sorts of things that the Seattle Police Department likes to do. But so far, the Seattle Police Union hasn't said a word.
All right. Moving on, the Port of Seattle.
Yeah, the Port of Seattle and the Manufacturing Industrial Council came out this week and said that they are anti-third arena. They cited the $3 billion in business and tax revenue per year that the Port of Seattle provides to the city of Seattle. But Chris Hansen, the hedge fund billionaire who wants to build the third arena, he says he's okay with killing port business, that that's the way that ports have gone around the nation, that industrial areas in cities have changed into office buildings and hotels and various other entertainment and service industry facilities, including sports arenas, and that he thinks a working port like the city of Seattle's, it's okay for it to just die. But I have to tell you that because the United States is a major importer of a lot of not just food, but also a lot of the consumer items that you and I take for granted. That,
much of which comes through the Port of Seattle.
And much,
we're closer to Asia than California.
Yeah,
is.
And much of which comes via ship because it's cheaper to ship things via ship than via air. That you have to have working ports. And the farther away a working port is from where the consumers are, the more expensive goods are. So if we lose business to the Port of Vancouver or the Port of Tacoma or more likely a port down in California, it'll be much, much more expensive for you and I to buy some of the things that we take for granted. And also we would lose those good-paying jobs that you have at the Port of Seattle. I tell you, a few nights a week working a concession stand for minimum wage is not going to make up for the loss of longshore jobs.
Hmm. All right. Moving on. Rob McKenna.
Yeah, Rob McKenna, Republican gubernatorial candidate who claims to be pro-choice because he wants to be elected in the state of Washington, came out this week against the Reproductive Parity Act. Now, that was the legislation that narrowly failed in this most recent state legislative session, but will almost certainly be reintroduced next year, and if so, would be on a Governor McKenna's desk. It would require insurance companies that cover women's reproductive health to also cover abortion. McKenna claimed that he opposed it because the act would, quote, put federal funding of women's health care at risk by invoking the Weldon Amendment. Now, that's a federal piece of legislation that would pull federal funding from the states if the states do not recognize an insurance company's right to conscience for things like covering abortion. The thing is, the Weldon Amendment is already addressed in the Reproductive Parity Act, and those exemptions are there. So McKenna basically was lying about the nature of the legislation in order to justify...
proving he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, either proving he doesn't know what he's talking about, or it's proving that he's being very cynical and using that to justify an anti-choice position when he's claiming to be pro-choice. And this is not the first time McKenna has done this. So, but he's justifying it by saying he doesn't want to lose that federal funding because he's so concerned about the reproductive health of women. He's such a guy.
I'm not buying it.
Right. Moving on, finally, for local, the Seattle School District.
Yeah, speaking of candidates, this week, three candidates flew into Seattle and interviewed with the city council other school district officials over who's going to replace Maria Goodloe Johnson as Seattle school superintendent. Now, I think it's kind of interesting. The Seattle Times ran some articles about these three folks, and it was clear who their preference was. They like Steve Enoch, who has a John Sanford personality. He's very much a salesman, but he also, according to his former school districts that he worked for, he also has a hierarchical autocratic style.
Which is just what the Seattle School District needs.
Oh, exactly. Not what the school district needs. He also, there were major financial problems at one of the districts he managed, and it seems pretty clear to me that those financial problems were allowed to go on because he did not pay any attention to the district's finances. Now, that's just negligence in my mind. That's part of the school superintendent's job. They can't just say, okay, it's the chief financial person's job to do this. I'm not even going to look at it. No, they're supposed to be overseeing that. And it was pretty clear he didn't do that at one of the districts that he managed. Now, the Seattle Times also showed that they liked Sandra Husk. She, I think, is a better candidate. She's currently at the Salem-Keizer District, which is very similar to the Seattle School District in many ways. And she has some experience helping out a district with a diverse student population and helping students who are learning English as a second language get a lot better at their schoolwork. And she's also good at bringing sides together to discuss problems, which I think is good. But I was more impressed by Jose Banda. He's currently at the Anaheim City School District. It's a much smaller district than Seattle's, but it has a majority of students who are Latino, a very high poverty rate, and lower performing schools. He managed to turn around that entire district and bring the schools up to snuff in a very short time. He's also got a very strong work ethic. He's also very, very good at bringing all sides to the table, at listening, at getting both the teachers' union and parents to talk to each other and to work out problems. And that's exactly, I think, what the Seattle School District needs, is someone who can listen and someone who can get all sides involved in the problems and feel like they have a stake in the solution.
All right. Well, moving on to national, starting with CISPA.
Yeah, folks who may may remember SOPA and PIPA, the two acts earlier this year that would have infringed on internet freedom of speech and availability, and were stopped at the last minute by huge grassroots mobilizations. Well, proving that there's a lot more of that where SOPA and PIPA came from, within a couple of months, we now have the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, which was passed this week by the U.S. House of Representatives with amendments that will probably forestall the previous Obama threat of a veto. Now, that include the ACLU says CISPA, and this is a direct quote, would create a cybersecurity exemption to all privacy laws and allow companies to share the private and personal data they hold on their American customers with the government. Beyond the potential for massive data collection authorization, the bill would provide no meaningful oversight of or accountability for the use of those new information sharing authorities. Now, that pretty well sums it up. But it gets worse, because there were last-second amendments before the House passed this, which passed unanimously with both Democratic and Republican support, that expanded the legal rationales for sharing that information, sharing your information. In addition to cybersecurity and national security, now they can ask for the information for investigation and prosecution of cybersecurity crime, for protection of individuals, and protection of children. Now, protection of individuals can mean almost anything, and whenever you hear anybody justify any legislation by saying it protects children, alarm bells should be going off. Yeah. It also, the CISPA also indemnifies companies from any liability for not giving information to the government, so you can't sue them. It basically means that the Fourth Amendment around search and seizure would not now apply online at all. Now, this goes to the Senate, where the Democrats have a majority, and then if they pass it on to President Obama. So it's about time we start carpet bombing our Senate representatives, and which in this case would be Maria Cantwell, and who's up for re-election this year, and Patty Murray, and the White House also saying that this really, really needs to be stopped.
Carpet bombing them with comments.
Comments.
Comments, yes. Emails.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Yes. Well, yes. Or, you know, munitions, whatever.
Okay. Moving on. Gender identity.
Yeah, the EEOC ruling this week that gender identity discrimination is covered by Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It's a huge step forward for the rights of transgender folks in this country, and certainly something that you never would have seen under a Republican administration. So for all those who claim that the Obama administration is terrible, there's a lot of not-so-little regulatory things like this that are, in fact, very different, and that's well worth remembering. So very good news there.
Mm-hmm. And also related to that, there is a study out this week.
Yeah, the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology published a study this week which gathered a great deal of empirical evidence for what you probably already intuitively thought, that homophobia can result at least in part from the suppression of same-sex desire. Now, this might be termed the Republican study, and just remember, if somebody says Republicans are so gay, it's not a slur, just scientific fact.
Nice to have a bit of scientific fact to back up the anecdotal evidence we've all seen
yes.
so much of.
All right. Moving on, Slate Magazine.
Yeah, Larry Sims, writer in Slate, on the online magazine, went through has an article this week, went through 140,000 formerly classified Bush administration documents relating to the use of torture. And his conclusion out of going through all those documents is that the entire administration, including President Bush, broke laws both by explicitly authorizing torture and then by covering it up. Moreover, they also forced the people under them to break those same laws, and then they went and forced their White House lawyers to come up with some sort of contorted legal rationale for torture, which, as we know they all did. So it raises the obvious question, when are the indictments coming? Maybe are the trials or jail sentences or torture, it would be kind of nice. Maybe they could be put in isolation units or something.
Yeah, and it's important for us to remember, too, that this is how these guys are going to be remembered in history, as the regime of torturers. And it's important to point out, too, that they really set a legal precedent here. This isn't just something that happened during the Bush administration, and now we can all forget about it, and it was those guys, and it was back then. A lot of this stuff is continuing. And
because it's continuing under a Democratic administration, therefore becomes, quote-unquote, uncontroversial.
Yeah, and it's something we're going to be dealing with probably for the next 100 years.
For instance, the Obama administration is prosecuting one of the whistleblowers that brought out a bunch of this information.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, there was a development in that this week also. Bradley Manning, who was allegedly responsible for the huge WikiLeaks leak, a military judge in Fort Meade, Maryland, allowing this week the most serious charge against Manning, that he, quote-unquote, aided the enemy in this case being al-Qaeda, by releasing those documents. He allowed that charge to stand, and that could mean life in prison for Bradley Manning.
All right. Well, as if there aren't enough wars that the U.S. is waging, the current war against women.
Yeah, the Republican war against lady parts moved forward this week. The good news in this is that the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act of 2011 passed the Senate. That was in some doubt. However, 31 Republicans wound up opposing opposing violence against women.
Opposing efforts to reduce violence against women.
Yes.
Let's be clear on that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Florida Republican Governor Rick Scott used this opportunity in his budget to strip funding from rape crisis centers in his state. And of course, there are a number of things going on at the state level across the country, which we normally don't get to in this program, that have been very, very disturbing on that front in places like Tennessee and Mississippi and Arizona and so forth. But, when Republicans claim that it's unfair, there's really no war against women. Wrong. There is.
Yeah, and it's coming from the Republicans.
All right, moving on. Some good news this week, just to mix in, regarding the death penalty.
Yeah, Connecticut the state of Connecticut abolished the death penalty this week. They became the fifth state to do so in recent years. And even better news on that front is the state of California, which has one of the larger death rows in the country, is poised to become the next state to abolish the death penalty. And of course, and that may well happen within the next month or two. And this raises the obvious question, why can't we do it in Washington State?
Would be good.
All right. Subprime loans.
Yeah, the New York Times reported about a week and a half ago that banks and credit card companies are getting back into the subprime loan business. Lots of those loans are being offered to people who have just finished going through bankruptcy. 1.1 million new credit cards were sent to borrowers with damaged credit. Can you guess what the time frame was? Just in December alone, 1.1 million new credit cards. Now, you can ask why. Why would banks get back into giving credit cards to people who have just been through bankruptcy because they couldn't pay their credit card bills? Well, it's because they can charge interest rates up to 29% on people who have been through bankruptcy. They can also tack on lots of fees, especially late payment fees. So ask yourself, if you're a bank and you're sitting on a huge pile of cash and you've just heard from the federal government that they're going to start restricting the kinds of investments you can make on behalf of the bank to earn profits for your shareholders, you might ask yourself, where can I find profits? Well, you're going to start wanting to give cards to people who regularly make late payments. And that means people who have literally proven that they are poor credit risks. So the total loans extended to subprime borrowers last year totaled up to $12.5 billion. That was up 55% from 2010. That's not good news.
All right. And the FDA and prescriptions.
Yeah, on the other hand, there was some good news in the last week or two. The FDA announced that farmers and ranchers will now need prescriptions to use antibiotics for livestock. How it usually works, you might think, what? Are they going to take their cows to the doctor? Well, no, this is how it works on a farm. Usually you have a scheduled time each month when the veterinarian comes by and looks at your sick animals. Maybe it's once a month, maybe it's twice a month, whatever. And if there's an emergency, you can call him and he'll come out and look at an animal. If there's an emergency. Well, in the past, farmers could buy antibiotics directly from the drug companies in order to just put it in the feed to help stimulate growth in animals. This has led to a lot of antibiotic-resistant bugs out there. About 99,000 Americans, it's estimated about 99,000 Americans a year die from drug-resistant strains of bacteria and infections. And in an effort to try to tamp down on antibiotic resistance, since about 80% of the antibiotics used in the United States go into the animal feed, the FDA has said that they're asking drug companies voluntarily to put on antibiotic labels for prescription only, and they're asking farmers to go to veterinarians to get prescriptions for those drugs to use them in specifically targeted sick animals, not just put it in the feed of all animals on their farm.
And just for context, a reminder that the use of antibiotics in animal feed, and which, you know, in turn winds up in the meat that some of
that
us eat.
Yes.
Is one of the leading factors in the rise of antibiotic-resistant disease.
Yeah, and of antibiotic-resistant strains of E. coli and other kinds of things you can get eating tainted meat. Now, there will be no enforcement of this rule. The FDA, this is the downside. The FDA has asked drug companies to comply voluntarily and farmers to comply and veterinarians to comply voluntarily. And we'll see how far that goes.
Mike, where is that laugh track we keep asking for?
it's not very high in the queue.
Yeah.
All right.
It should be. We need it every week.
We do. There's always something.
Make me cry. Student loans. That would be.
Oh, yes, yes. That,
that'd be you,
that's one of mine,
back
isn't
to you,
it?
Job.
Let's see, we're in this enormous list of things. Was that? Oh yes, the House Republicans passing this week a bill to cover extending student loan subsidies at a rate of 3.4%. If Congress does not act, it will automatically go up to 6.8% later this year. But the way that House Republicans want to do it is by stripping $5.9 billion from Obamacare programs. There is a different version in the Democratic-controlled Senate that would pay for it by closing tax loopholes for some wealthy business owners. Barack Obama says he would veto the House bill, but again, you have both parties in an election year trying to appeal on a middle-class issue, but funding it by very different mechanisms, and the House mechanism would be do it, trying to weaken the health care bill that they're trying very hard to abolish.
All right, and then briefly, the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Yes, came out on state-level employment statistics this week, and Scott Walker's Wisconsin turns out to be the only state with statistically significant job losses, 0.9% over the last year. Almost every other state had better numbers in terms of job losses than the previous year. And the recall for Scott Walker as governor of Wisconsin is coming up next month, so hopefully that won't help him.
Right. Moving on to international, starting with Iran.
Yeah, the Israeli military chief of staff this week, General Benny Gantz, told an Israeli newspaper that he didn't think Iran would be building a nuclear weapon. He called the Iranian regime a rational regime. This is in...
Irrational as opposed to irrational.
Yeah, a rational regime, and that rational regimes don't do things that are against their best interests and that they wouldn't be building a nuclear weapon. This is in line with U.S. military and U.S. intelligence estimates. It's not something that you get when you read the news here in the United States, because because newspapers and news outlets tend to quote politicians, not military experts or intelligence experts.
They also tend to quote experts who will toe the Israeli government line.
Yeah, well, for example, the U.S., I think it was CNN, I am not sure exactly which news outlet, but they interviewed Benjamin Netanyahu this last week, and he basically implied that the Iranian government is irrational and that he expected them to be moving forward on a nuclear weapon. Well, this is not what the Israeli military believes. They believe the exact opposite. But you wouldn't get that story here in the U.S. press.
Hmm. And then related to that, cyber attacks?
Yeah, and related to that, there's been a new cyber attack against Iran. The oil ministry had to take all of their computers offline because of the wiper virus, which went in and erased information on hard disks in the oil ministry of Iran. 2 years ago, I want to point out, a joint Israeli-U.S. cyber attack shut down Iran's nuclear centrifuges, the Stuxnet worm. This, I think, is a very extreme way to deal with a so-called, well, what our intelligence estimates tell us is a rational government, whether or not they're friendly. You don't launch a cyber attack against them. However, I also want to point out, too, that when the West launches cyber attacks against our so-called enemies, we're risking having the dog come back to bite us, because we also have computers that are very vulnerable to those kinds of cyber attacks. And you can bet that in a country that is enriching uranium at this moment, that they probably have some guys who are pretty good at computer science and can figure out how to alter computer viruses to come back at us.
It's also worth mentioning that the U.S. media and government like to scream a lot about Iran's support for terrorism. Well, here you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Who's the terrorist in this instance?
Moving on, a study on global warming.
Yeah, a study coming out this week in the journal Science, that global warming is causing the cycle of evaporation and rainfall over oceans to intensify much more than scientists had expected. That, of course, means also that because you have more extremes in the amount of moisture that's in the air, that there's a much higher potential in the future for extreme weather in coming decades. This, again, one more example where every time scientists make a projection about the impact of global warming, we're finding out that the reality is worse than the most pessimistic projections.
Yeah, and you know, this wasn't just a verification of what they'd already thought was happening. what they thought was happening was a much less intense, a much lower intensification of the water cycle. This study shows that the intensification of the water cycle is probably double what prior estimates had calculated. And it's yet more proof that global warming is intensifying and that there are these amplifications going on that we didn't understand very well in the past.
I have a feeling we'll understand them in the future. And finally, briefly, Iceland.
Yeah, the country of Iceland has introduced a debt forgiveness plan which writes down deeply underwater mortgages in their country. They would be underwritten to 110% of households' pledgeable assets. This, of course, direct and fairly sweeping help for people who are underwater in their mortgages, and it raises the question of why countries, say, in Europe or, I don't know, even the United States couldn't try a similar approach. I'm holding my breath even right now. Yep.
But not from the previous thing about the water in
the
oceans.
No.
All right, let's lots of events.
It is a busy, busy week here. We're going to keep you busy here, starting with several that are going on midday today. From 11:30 to 1:30, the League of Women Voters is holding a fundraiser lunch in immigration at the Crossroads with keynote speaker Jorge Barón, who's the executive director of the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. That will be a $45 ticket downstairs at Town Hall, 8th and Seneca. Also today, from 12 until 2, Airport and Port of Seattle workers will be holding a march for their collective bargaining rights. That will be a rally in March beginning at the SeaTac Airport International Flag Pavilion across from Radisson Hotel. That's at 18118 International Boulevard, Highway 99 South. That will be followed by a march down International Boulevard for a community festival in Angle Lake Park in SeaTac. Also today from noon until 3, Unite Women of Washington, that's a new Facebook group that has sprung up across the country to combat the war against women, is sponsoring a march from SCCC downtown, I believe, a rally at Westlake Park at 4th and Pine afterwards. And if you'd like to find out more information on that new group, Unite Women, WA, that's all one word, .tumblr.com is where you would go. Also today at 1 o'clock, the guy you heard at the 7:30 segment, Bruce Gagnon, the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space and a longtime peace and social justice advocate. He will be speaking in Redmond at Soul Food Books, 15748 Redmond Way. Also tomorrow, Bruce will be speaking, and he'll be joined by Gil-Chun Ko, a South Korean activist opposing construction of the new U.S. naval base at Jeju Island. That'll be at University Temple United Methodist Church, 43rd and 15th in Northeast in the U District. On Monday, April 30th, Bruce will be in Tacoma at UW-Tacoma's Carwayne Pavilion, or Auditorium, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, 1551 Broadway in Tacoma. And also Monday, there will be a Jeju Island protest at the South Korean Consulate in Seattle at 2033 6th Avenue between Lenora and Virginia. That's at 4 o'clock. 7 o'clock Monday night, there will be a fundraiser for the Al-Rawad Children's Center in Bethlehem. Abed Abusrur, sure I'm butchering that, director of the Al-Rabad Cultural and Theater Society and Aid Refugee Camp in Bethlehem, will be speaking on beautiful resistance in Palestine. That'll be at St. Mark's Cathedral, Skinner Auditorium in the Nicholas Building, 1245 10th Avenue and North Capitol Hill. Tuesday is May Day. And the Occupy movement and Occupy Seattle will be sponsoring a general strike that includes a 9 a.m. rally at Westlake Park, an 11:20 SCCC student walkout, 12 and 3 o'clock. There will be rallies and marches starting at Westlake Park at 4th and Pine downtown. Also on Tuesday, the annual Immigrant Rights March will be happening with a 3:30 rally and 5 o'clock march starting at Judkins Park in near South Seattle. Thursday, May the 3rd, Rocky Anderson, the former mayor of Salt Lake City, is running a progressive candidacy for president, challenging President Obama from the left as part of the Justice Party. He will be in Seattle speaking at the University Temple United Methodist Church once again. That's at 43rd and 15th Northeast. And then Rocky Anderson and the Justice Party will also on Saturday morning, May the 5th, right after this program, at 10 a.m., be collecting ballot access signatures so they can be on the ballot in Washington State that will be at Pike Place Market in downtown Seattle.
He's actually going to be my guest next Saturday morning.
And you should all listen to that because he's great.
All right. Talking as we do every week with Job Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. Where do people find Eat the State?
www.eatthestate.org, and there's a bunch of new stuff up on the site now, so go check it out.
Yeah, and you can find some more of my articles at mariatomchik.com.